We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, Roto Grinders? Food for thought. We made it to the Super Bowl. Another season just about in the books. I'm the Looch. I'm here with my guy, Chief Justice Will Priester, and we have a phenomenal guest with us today, but I'll let Chief do the intro because that's what he does.
Yeah, man. So glad to come on and talk with everyone. Yet again, this is our last NFL pod. Maybe we sneak one in for NBA. You never know, but this is our last one for the season, and I think closing this one out, man, we probably couldn't have a better person to come on. It's been in the industry a long time, one of the industry goats. I'm just going to say it like this, folks. Number one in our program, Stunder Dan in our hearts, Dan Paglio is in the building from Roto Baller. Dan, what's going on?
Guys, I don't know if I'm worthy of that intro, like, geez, but I appreciate it. Made me feel welcome here. I was thrilled when you guys offered me to come on, and excited to talk just about sports, anything you want to talk about. Love it. Appreciate it, man. Thanks for that, Will.
Yes, sir.
Of course. And for those of you not watching and just listening, he's decked out in his Pittsburgh Steeler attire. So good to get one of my local boys from my neck of the woods on the podcast for once. You're just PA. Across Route 78 over there, Dan.
Yeah, I know. We're not that far away. We've talked about meeting up sometime halfway. And definitely, like, it's always cool to meet some people in person in the industry. And we'll have to make it happen, man, sometime, no doubt.
Yeah, let's do it for sure. Maybe we could do a show from a diner somewhere or something.
Yeah,
or
something like that. That'd be funny. That'd be awesome. Yeah, I'd love that.
Represent we have a lot PA, to man. Catch up on. We're kind of smack in the middle of conference championship week and the Super Bowl, obviously. And of course, the stage is set now for the 49ers and the Chiefs. There's already been some line movement and a bunch of things. The props have been released, and we'll get to that. But, you know, we're not going to beat a bunch of dead horses here, for lack of a better term. But we do need to, you know, wrap up and close out some of the falling outs and some of the results from conference championship week. And I'm obviously really excited to hear Chief come on here and talk with me every week, Dan. But we had a pretty good Josh Allen discussion a couple of weeks ago, and Chief was not making any excuses for Josh Allen. And I guess I was feeling generous that day, and I was willing to throw him a bone or two, you know, because of varying circumstances throughout the season and in the game. Yeah. But I want to start with the AFC, and I'll let Chief let it rip. And I want to hear your thoughts. If Lamar Jackson's the MVP of the league, hypothetically, and most likely, then are you making any excuses for the guy from the Baltimore Ravens loss to Kansas City 17-10 last week?
Man, you know I'm not making any excuses. You're a big-time quarterback. You got to show up and play football. Like, that's not what this is. Like, look, here's what the media is telling you. Oh, you can't blame Lamar. They ran a pass-heavy pass heavy offense, and you know this team is built and predicated on running the football. And because they had a bad game plan by Todd Monken, you know, we're giving Lamar a pass. No, we're not giving Lamar a pass. That's ridiculous. Here's why. Lamar's got the money. He's one of the top options at quarterback in the NFL. And the score was 17-10. It's not like the score was 35-7, 28-7, you know, 55. Mm-hmm. It's a 17-10 football game. And you're telling me we're going to give Lamar a pass because of a bad game plan? Look, I coach basketball. I know it's a different sport. Yeah, I understand sometimes you can have a bad game plan, but you're the quarterback. You can make some adjustments, right? Aren't you able to go up to the line, call some audible, say, hey, Todd, I know you know you want us to throw the ball here. I think we're going to go to an RPO check. I think we're going to go to a you know quarterback draw check. We're going to go to inside dive check. Like, there are things you can do at the quarterback position that can help put your team in a position to be successful. So I don't want to hear these excuses for Lamar Jackson. This doesn't make sense. It's a 17-10 football game, right? Once again, if this was some blowout and obviously he had to sit back there and sling it, okay, whatever. The Chiefs just he had a bad day. Lamar did not have as bad of a day as we think. Yes, I'll give him this. Zay Flowers, come on, buddy. Gotta take care of the football, get to the goal line. Like, I'll give him that. That's a game-changing play. Don't get me wrong. But to give Lamar a pass, and we're saying, yeah, he's the MVP, but no, we're not doing that. Josh Allen doesn't get a pass. Dak Prescott doesn't get a pass. Patrick Mahomes doesn't get a pass. You know Aaron Rodgers never got a pass in my book, if you've listened to this podcast before. Right? These top quarterbacks, Justin Herbert's not getting a pass. I don't give these guys passes. You make too much money and you're too skilled to complain when you lose a game by 7 points. Get out there and do your job. If your job is to play quarterback, then guess what? Hit the wide open receivers, and Lamar's got legs, right? Lamar's good enough. Lamar was good enough to take over this game by himself. The defense did their job. They gave up 14 points early. They gave up 3 points the rest of the quarter. It's your job to win the football game now, not the defense. They did their job. I'm going to cut it off there because I'm sure Dan has some thoughts. But giving big-time quarterbacks passes when they don't play well really fires me up, Dan.
I can tell.
I'm probably giving more energy to Lamar because I think he played way worse than Josh Allen did. And Josh Allen made some timely mistakes late in that game that cost him a win. But Lamar just played bad almost start to – like, come on, guy. You can run the football yourself.
Yeah.
He did none of that. That makes no sense.
Makes no sense.
I'm going to be quiet, Dan. Please. Please.
All right. Here's where – again, I'm removing my Steeler Homer hat. Like, I – you know, as a Steeler fan, I was obviously rooting against the Ravens. But here's my thing. I think it was so bizarre because – you see him in that first touchdown that they got where he scrambled around, made the throw, and instantly I was thinking, oh, crap, here we go. Like, Lamar's in his feels, right? Like, he's got – then he, like, you know, caught his own deflection and ran with it, and you're like, he can make these plays.
13 yards, by the way, on that play.
Right. 13 yards. And then all of a sudden he's dropping back, and he's looking at he's checking down. He's, like, he's taking sacks, like – you said, like, I was blown away by the fact that he did not run the ball or scramble or make any big plays. The big play made to Zay Flowers, but eventually they didn't score on. But, like, was another one where he ran around, scrambled, like, found the guy deep. Like, if he would have played within his normal self, I think they probably win the game. Or at least the game is a possession game down to the wire, like, whatever. It was like he was forcing himself to stay in the pocket to, like, a point where you were like, what are you, like, go run, go do something, like make something happen. It was very bizarre. Baltimore got, like you said, got out of their game plan entirely. Kansas City went way too conservative late. Like, I was like, you know, what, I don't know what they were doing either. Like, they went down the field twice like gangbusters, and all of a sudden they're like running the football and checking it down on third down, and like they basically allowed Baltimore the opportunity to get back in the game if they wanted to. And they didn't. It was crazy. I don't know. I had the Chiefs, and I was rooting for them, and I was hoping they would win. But the whole game, I was terrified because I'm like, if Lamar turns it on, he's one, two big plays away from just totally swinging this game back around. And like you said, I don't think you can make any excuses for him. The whole playoff Lamar thing is going to hang over his head for a while yet until he can show that he can win these big games. Like, I'm sorry, but the win over Houston means not much to me. Like, Houston was probably shouldn't have been there in the first place. We know, like, they were playing with house money. Like, they were overachieving for what they had done. So that win doesn't really do much for me. And until we see him win a big game, you know, I think Josh Allen, the week before, had a better game, obviously a much better game statistically against the Chiefs, and had better stats than Lamar most of the season too. But I don't know. He'll probably get the MVP. It's a regular season award, mainly because they had those huge wins down the stretch where they blew out the Niners, they blew out the Dolphins. But, you know, for me, Josh Allen led all the quarterbacks in total touchdowns, like brought his team back from what, 5-6 or whatever, all the way to within a field goal from the AFC Championship. Now he's probably my guy if I had to take a pick, but you know, I think Lamar will probably win it.
I can't sit here and say that, you know, the Baltimore staff did no service to Lamar Jackson.
No.
Three early down running back runs in the first half. It's mind blowing. I get it. Lamar needs to take accountability, at least a majority of it. But it's more like a 65-35 thing if I'm trying to call it. You know, I have to like put a little bit of blame on Todd Monken and the game plan. And I understand, but who knows what those closed door discussions were? Maybe Lamar really bought in. You know, Lamar, I'm a quarterback, not a running back. I can do this. If this is the game plan he's calling, I got this. I mean, who are we compared to them?
I can't. Here's my argument. This is my only argument for the quarterback position. Like, if you're an offensive lineman, we're having a totally different discussion here. Wide receiver, at the quarterback position, when they're paying him this type of money, you don't think these guys have the freedom to say, okay, he called X slant, 22 cross, you know, dip, right screen, whatever. I'm just making it up. You don't think he's got the autonomy to come up to that line and say, wait, one, two, three. They got three in the box. I don't like that call. Check. Hey, this is what we're doing now. You don't think he's got that type of autonomy.
Lamar's not that guy, though. Lamar's not that guy. Like, I'm sorry. Like, he's the lowest Wunderlich scorer in the league. Like, he's not Peyton Manning up there. He's not going to make those checks. He's not a heady, like, audible guy. He's just an incredible athlete who can make incredible plays. So let him run around and play backyard football. Like, that's what he's good.
I get it. Here's what I'm saying, Dan.
He's not going to go up and check like Peyton Manning. And he's not that guy.
And that's okay. I'm sorry. Right.
That's okay. Yeah. Right.
Here's my argument, though. How many years has Lamar been in the league? This is what I'm really getting at. Lamar's been in the league long enough to have the ability for 1-2 checks. Like, because football's intricate, but like to check from a pass to a run is very simple. Like,
sure.
You say, okay, hey, we've got numbers. Hey, we're checking to this run play. Oh, we're supposed to run. Wait a minute. They've got the advantage on the run. We're going to check to a screen, you know, a bubble screen outside or a quick pass outside that to get us 3 or 4 yards to keep which is an extension of the run game. Okay, wait a minute. They're running this. Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go RPO. We're going to try to hit the slant. If not, I'll pull it out. Like, that's all I'm saying. Like, he knows how to play football. Like, I know he's not Brady or Mahomes or, heck, maybe even C.J. Stroud in terms of how he wants to manipulate the game. But you can make 1-2 checks from a pass to a run to – like, that's all I'm saying. Like, come on, guy. You've got to know that.
Maybe those simple checks would be enough in a 17-10 game to get the win, but – still, you're Todd Monken. You have the whole playbook available to you rather than Lamar checking down to a couple of options at the line. You know, it's obviously it's mind-blowing to all of us. You don't have to blame Lamar. You can blame Lamar, but the three of us sitting here still are like, what the hell are they doing? Like, who you're going to blame is a different story, but the fact is that was just kind of a head-scratcher. And, you know, Spags has done an amazing job with that defense in Kansas City this year. Oh, yeah. And, I mean, you know what? Like, he didn't even have to adjust. He just started blitzing. It worked. There was nothing and no screens, nothing to counter it. in the Baltimore game plan, apparently. So he just kept coming the whole game. And right. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. So,
Luch,
there it is.
I didn't play the quarterback position. And even I know if they're going to start sending blitzes from any side, you just throw to where they just vacated. It's very – look, okay. I know I'm making this more simple than it actually is, but my point is if you play quarterback, slant right where the blitz left. Out route right where the blitz – like it's not rocket science per se. And I think, you know, you know me, I'm just much harder on quarterbacks because quarterbacks get paid the money. And yes, especially the big quarterbacks. Like, you know, if you're Jacoby Brissett, you're going to get a pass from me. You're not the starter, right? You're not the guy they're playing the big money. You're the guy they're paying to come in and keep the team afloat if something bad happens, right? I'm probably a little bit hard on Andy Dalton because he gets paid elevated backup quarterback money because he could probably still start somewhere. Dan. Like, if the chips fell his way, he could still go somewhere and start. Like, he's just as good as Geno Smith to be. As an example. You know what I mean? Like, I'm saying that's possible. But when you're Lamar, you're getting 200+. And that and all these guys, like, you get paid, in my opinion, to help the organization keep moving forward when things don't go right. Like, Brock Purdy's making $900,000. And I'm not trying to look, we understand his draft position. So he's going to get paid. Don't get me wrong. But Brock Purdy is out here doing Brock Purdy things and helping this team win. You know, like, and that's your job. At that position, you get paid to lead the charge when things are going wrong. And Lamar didn't do that. And that's my thing. He didn't do it.
All right. Yeah.
I promise I'm done now. I'm done.
I really do think you're both right. And I hate to be the split in the middle here, but I do think that the game plan was bad. They could have scripted a better game plan for him, but at the same time, it does fall on Lamar. Like, he can't. We saw Brock Purdy, like you says, like Brock Purdy ran for more yards in his game probably than Lamar did. Like, yeah, I was blown away that Lamar didn't take just kind of flipping back into Lamar mode and just do his thing. But hey, I'm, you know, at the end of the day, I had the Chiefs, so I was happy. But and I think the Chiefs are going to give us a really good, fun matchup for Super Bowl II since we've already seen the Baltimore San Francisco game this year. We're gonna see a whole new matchup. So
yeah, and. We didn't bring you on the show to be nice, Dan. You could tell us we're wrong.
No, that's all right. I mean, I do really do think that you're both partially right.
You know, you made a good point about Baltimore really hammering kind of bad teams. And Chief and I have talked on the show all year that there just was a gap between, for the most of the season, Baltimore, San Fran, and the rest of the league. And, you know, they were kind of our two first-tier teams. And then the second tier of contenders or teams that you think it would be a nice idea to make the Super Bowl, there's probably 14 teams that just have glaring holes somewhere. And you know, Baltimore really hammered some of those bad defenses, and Kansas City was the best defense that Baltimore had to play all year. I mean,
true.
Baltimore has been in a couple of shootouts, but that was the first game where the defense like was really rattled in a big moment. Objectively, the biggest game at M&T Bank Stadium. You know, hosting a conference championship there. I had to look back because I couldn't believe the other AFC conference championships at M&T Bank were on the road. But then when you realize you're playing in a division with, you know, Brady Manning, conference with Brady and Manning for 20 years, I guess it's not that far-fetched. Sure. But, you know, all the frustration penalties late in that game from that defense, the unnecessary roughnesses and the late hits in the quarterbacks, like those free 15 yards and first downs, I don't want to say put the nail in the coffin at that point because it was a one-score game, but you just kind of felt it just watching through the television screen from your living room, kind of felt it getting away at that point that these guys are kind of rattled.
Yeah, no doubt. I thought that too, and I think there's certainly some people that are going to say the Chiefs skipped calls and the NFL wanted the Chiefs to win. There's all those conspiracy theorists out there, but I mean, most of those calls in the announcers were on the same page, like, those were all the right calls. Like, there wasn't anything really that questionable there. Like, late hit on Mahomes, this, all the other personal foul stuff, like Zay Flowers spinning the ball over the dude. Like, what are you doing? Like, just really dumb stuff. I know he's a rookie. I mean, it's kind of, but like, you could tell, like, it was in their heads. Like, they were in their own heads a little bit. And, yeah, the Chiefs have been there. That's the thing about the Chiefs, man. They've been there, they've done it. You know, and one of the things we'll maybe get into in the Super Bowl is like the fact that they, they're back for like the fourth time in 5 years. Like they know the routine, they know the drill. No moment's too big for them. So,
yeah, I figure we'll get to the Chiefs when we look at to the Super Bowl. You know, they outclassed the Ravens. They kept their composure. The experience was definitely a huge factor. You make a great point. Since we're going to talk a lot about the Chiefs, can we shift over, I guess, to discuss more of the, you know, the fallout of Detroit, you know, and we'll save the Niners talk for the Super Bowl preview here, but just gut-wrenching. And if, you know, unless you're an NFC North fan of someone else that's not the Lions, or you're just a 49ers fan, just from like a human nature perspective, I'd be a little bit worried about you if there wasn't like a sliver of you kind of pulling for the Detroit story to maybe win this game. And just a gut-wrenching collapse. Chief, Detroit, rough one, phenomenal season. But, you know, with their season ending in that fashion, you know, the fan base and the organization has to feel a lot more empty. And it has to feel a little bit more of a failure of a season than it probably should feel like at this point for them, just because of, you know, the substantial lead they had in that game.
Listen, I don't want anyone. I'm going to bring my level down, because I could get even more flabbergasted about Dan Campbell and this play calling. But I'm going to start at this level and work my way up and try to keep this thing on the rails. I don't care what Dan Campbell said in his press conference about taking chances. Sir, you were up big time in this football game. Luch, Dan, I'm not sure how much you've listened to the pod. We are a pro field goal podcast. But here's why. If you keep taking points, right, you're going to come out ahead in the end. So it's not about, well, you know, it's 4th-and-2 on the 25. If I'm up 24 points, 21 points, 17 points, and it's 4th-and-2, take the field goal. You're going to go up 20. Even if they come down and get, like, you kick the ball off, they got to drive the length of the field. And obviously, I know they still have to drive the length of the field if you're kicking from the 25. But my point is, you left with something, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of like, I don't know if any of you guys have ever been part of that timeshare sales pitch. The reason you go to the sales pitch is because they're saying you're going to leave with something no matter what. So I don't have to buy the timeshare. They're going to give me a free dinner. They're going to give me tickets to a show. They're going to give me $500. Like, they're going to do all these things to try to sell me on the fact that I should, right, buy this timeshare. But all I have to do is keep telling them no and take what they're offering. And I feel like the parallel here is Dan Campbell went to the marketing pitch and decided he was going to get in a battle with the timeshare people that he wasn't going to win. He didn't take what they were offering. They said, hey, here's this nice field goal, right? Or you can keep going and try to get the touchdown. Maybe I should equate this more to Deal or No Deal or something like that, where there's this zonk room and you're like, hey, they said, hey, we'll give you $500, or you can try to see what's behind door number two. And door number two could be just something that's just terrible. They call it the zonk, and it's nothing. You leave with nothing. This is what Dan Campbell did to the Detroit Lions football team. He almost got them there and left with nothing. And that's bad coaching. I'm all for Dan Campbell being aggressive. But my point is this. When you're up by that many points, and guess what? We can blame it on the drops until we don't kick the field goals. If he took those 6 points, and yeah, I know apples, this probably isn't apples to apples and oranges to oranges. I get that. They lost the game by 3 points, folks. See, you see what I'm saying? See, this is where I get frustrated. Don't sell me this crap that you're going to continue to be aggressive. They were going to try to recline. No, you were up big time in this game. If you took those 6 points, there are different outcomes. Because guess what that does, Luch? I'm not sure if he knows this. There's another offensive coordinator, another head coach on the other side that's going to now have to change their game plan, because rather than you being up 14, you're now up 20. You get what I'm saying? And so their game plan going down the stretch now, as you get into the fourth quarter with 12 minutes left, 10 minutes left, and they're still down 9 points, they have to have a different game plan. They're not going to sit around and try to say, okay, well, we got to hand it to McCaffrey. We want to be methodical. No, they have to figure out ways to score, because their running game had got going in the first half. And I think in the second half, they ran the ball 6 times. Look, folks, I don't give these people passes when they have a chance to win. When you're in an NFC championship game and you're up close to 20 points, that's your opportunity to win. The game was squandered away by being too risky. I don't care what your regular season thoughts were. I don't care what you've done in the regular season. Do you think the Detroit Lions fans would have cared if Dan Campbell would have decided, hey, let's not be as risky today and kick these field goals? No, they would have been extremely happy to purchase their $5,000 tickets and head to the Super Bowl. So not only, Dan, did he cost his team a win, he cost the organization more profits. He cost them the glory of getting there. And next year isn't going to get easier. The Vikings are coming back. The Packers are coming back. The Bears are coming back. It's not getting easier. The NFC South may be better. The NFC North, the NFC East all may be better. We just saw it. I know we're not talking about this right now, but we just saw the Eagles got a competent offensive coordinator in there. They may now be a problem coming into the season, and this might be a team now that they have to contend with. I'm not sure what's going to happen with Tampa Bay. Obviously, the offensive coordinator came to my beloved beloved Panthers. We'll see it. I know I'm throwing some things in there that we're not talking about, but my point is the NFC on paper looks like it's going to get better, and Dan Campbell now has to figure out, how do we navigate the landmines of my aggressiveness when we're up? Okay, I'm done. Yeah.
Wow. All right. So let's start with the fact that I agree with you, Will, that that Dan Campbell had made his reputation on being this risk taker and all that stuff, but this game could have been coached differently. The moment is bigger, the game is bigger, the situations are different. It's different when you're like the Dallas game. They're tying it up. They want to go for the win with a 2-point conversion. That's a different scenario than it is being up 14, trying to go up 17, go up 20, whatever. Totally different scenario. Totally different outcome, or totally different, like, let's just say stakes, right? In terms of what's at stake. I agree with you. He, first of all, those guys obviously want to run through a wall for him. Like, he is such a leader of men, and he has that charisma and that, you know, players, coach, the whole mentality of that team, the whole direction of that team. It's awesome. It's a great story. I'm a huge fan of his just for that fact that he did that. He turned that around so quickly. The culture of that franchise, that's not easy to do. But at the same time, man, there's, like, coaching is not just that part. There's so much of the X's and O's. There's so much of the situational stuff. One of the reasons why, and I don't know if we don't have to get into it, I'm not the biggest Mike Tomlin fan, is that he's done similar things. Like, he's not a great in-game coach. Dan, you know, the guys love him, they'll play hard for him. But the other aspect is making the right decisions and the tough decisions, the ones that might not be as popular. When your players are sitting there saying, let's go for it, let's go for it. Like, clearly they want to go for it. And you have to be the guys like, no, we're going to kick, right? We're going to kick. It's not the fun thing. It's not the exciting thing. But it was the right move. And he botched it. And like you said, it hurts more because if Detroit goes in and they trailed by 2 touchdowns the whole game and lost, their fans are like, hey, that was a great season. We made it. But the fact that they were there and they were literally just dominating that game. There's really no excuses. They were dominating on both sides of the ball. And the moment, football is such a game of momentum, right? There's no other game out there where things can turn on one possession or one turnover or whatever it might be, you know. And that, when I felt that, I felt it. Whenever they went for it on fourth and didn't get it, I was like, man, they're leaving that door open, just the slightest crack. And then, of course, they go down and score, fumble, the door's wide open, right? Next thing, the tip pass, and you're like, oh man, this is, everything's going their way now. Like, you open that door crack, and that team, like San Francisco, right? Talented, good, opportunistic, just came crashing through. So I agree with you, man. He didn't do what needed to be done, and he should have accountability for that.
That moment was the long 4th and 2. I'm okay. You know, you go for it. You don't kick the first field goal. That's fine. You don't extend the game to 3 scores and you go for it on a long 4th and 2. And I get it. Badgley doesn't have a good a good track record, but that's your kicker. That, I mean, and you extend that thing to three scores, and maybe the momentum and everything doesn't snowball out of control. You have a bunch of guys who haven't been in a game of this, you know, of this magnitude before, saying, "Oh shit, here we go!" Right, as soon as you don't get that fourth and two, and that's where like the human nature, where the analytics police is coming to knock on my door, but that's where the human nature component comes into play, and you have an inexperienced, you know, roster full of guys who are kind of on their heels at that point a little bit, and just really disappointing. And you know, I agree with a great story. I'd run through a wall for Dan Campbell. He deserves a key to Detroit for turning that culture around to the city for sure. But you know, 4 years from now, like, it might be a, you know, do you want to go from good to great thing? And Chief and I, and it's no disrespect to Dan Campbell, but I feel like we have similar thoughts here, Dan Palo. I feel like, you know, he's just, but it might be a good segue, because there were some really big coaching candidates, big names, who didn't get hired, and you just see the league turning to offensive-minded head coaches, and the turnover rate among offensive coordinators is unbelievably minuscule. And we're not going to dive into it just yet, maybe in like 90 seconds, but Brian Callahan was the longest tenured offensive coordinator of 5 freaking years in the NFL, and now he's the head coach of a football team. So, you know, you have all of these systems put into place and maybe young teams buying in. But if you're a head coach who puts, you know, 90% of that responsibility on your offensive coordinator, you better hope you have a keen eye for a revolving door of talent that you can, you know, remain, you know, consistent throughout the years with your game plan. And again, that's not Dan Campbell. His strengths, it should be motivating and making in-game decisions. And he's failing miserably with the in-game decision part. Obviously hitting a home run with the culture change and having the guys play for him. But, and I think the saving grace is, Ben Johnson decided to come back, which we'll get to momentarily. But, the situational clock management. I mean, I feel like I could pull a handful of, the top Madden streamers in the world, or even the average Joes. I mean, hell, pass me the decision-making button, because the end of this game was also mind-blowing, which are Dan Campbell decisions. And he didn't do this, but I'm not a fan of, and it's just my opinion, taking timeouts before the 2-minute warning. He didn't do that. But when Detroit went down there and tried to punch it in, you know, about a minute left on the clock, they burnt timeouts. So if they didn't get the onside kickback, they were completely dead. They didn't have 3 timeouts to stop the clock, and that's exactly what happened. No one told you to run the ball down near the goal line and burn a timeout. No one told you to go for the score. You could have kicked 3. And then if you don't get the onside kickback, you have 3 timeouts to maybe get a stop. There are just more outs to extend your season, but I understand you shouldn't have been in that position in the first place. It's almost like here's Dan Campbell doubling down again after he screwed up. Kind of like in the Dallas game where they did get a little bit screwed, but he doubled down and, you know, went for it after the penalty. He just doubled down and said, you know, these are my guys and we're doing it. And I guarantee there's some influence from his players, like you pointed out, but it's just like, you know, you see the gifts that make so much sense in the memes about Dan Campbell on the blackjack table hitting at 20. And 20, I just feel like that's what he kept doing. And at some point you got to take your chips, put them in your pocket, go to the cashier window, take a girl out to a nice dinner and call it a night. And unfortunately, nobody had a nice dinner in Detroit that night. So
Luch, this is what we keep saying though, right? Like this is the problem.
I'm not surprised that this happened at all.
Dan Campbell has an overcommitment to being Dan Campbell. At some point, there's got to be a line that says, okay, there's winning and then there's philosophy. Right. And that's how I feel about analytics. Right. And guess what? People probably think we're anti-analytics folks. We're in the fantasy sports business. We are pro. This is what we do every day. And so we're trying to tell you is there's a line between common sense and analytics that we have to bring together. We're actually all on the same team, because guess what we want at the end? The W. We want to win. Right. So the analytics have their part and the common sense has their part. And I think Dan Campbell is operating in himself a little bit too much, right? There's a way to be aggressive, and there's also a way to say, you know what? In this situation, I would usually do this, but we got the hopes and dreams of a whole city on our shoulders. Let's keep finding ways to cement the fact that we want to carry this city to a Super Bowl. Because here's the thing. Detroit's been bad so long, but now they're actually good. And guess what comes with being good?
Expectations.
People are expecting Detroit to come back and win again. Like, it's not happenstance that the Run Barry Run documentary came out this year, right? We saw in that documentary Barry Sanders getting there. There were immediate expectations because he was a generational talent. And they had some chances. They couldn't capitalize on them. And folks, listen, this team feels like they might be in that boat. This was their chance to get there. Even if they didn't win, that city would have been extremely happy to be in the Super Bowl. They didn't even get to taste the glory of it. And that's on Dan Campbell. I know players drop passes, but come on, man. And I'm going to leave it there.
I think what you mentioned earlier about how tough it is to get back is relevant, because regardless of what everyone else in the league is doing, everyone else is going to improve and get better. But it's so hard to maintain, winning in the NFL from year to year. The schedule gets harder once you had a good year, right? Everything changes. You got the target on your chest the next year. I mean, we see so often teams struggle to get back just to the playoffs, let alone make it that far. So yeah. It's going to be a tougher division. All those points you made earlier are really salient in terms of this was kind of a big opportunity for them. And to use the blackjack metaphor, one of the most important things you do at the blackjack table that no one wants to do is surrender, man, is fold it. Give me half my money back. Give me half my money back, right? And I'll play the next hand. And he like you said, we probably want to move on from this, but at the end of the day, he's accountable for that. He has to look in the mirror probably every day from now until next season and think, what if, right? What if we kick there? What if we do this differently? Because they felt like they had that game. It really did.
Well, I feel like we can take 15 minutes, and I can combine a lot of things into this segue here. I want to talk about a lot of the coaching movement, a lot of new head coaches, new coordinators, a lot of teams missing pieces. And I think the saving grace for Dan Campbell and the Lions is Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn both interviewed for head coaching positions. And I don't know if Aaron Glenn is confirmed back, but he didn't get any of the open vacancies. I would imagine he wouldn't take a lateral move and go somewhere else to call a defense. But it seems like they're both going to return. And Ben Johnson was a huge commodity, one of the younger, highly touted, more brilliant offensive minds. And that's huge for Detroit if they want any kind of replication of success. Because, after losing a heartbreaker like that, I just would hate to see someone come in and implement an entire new system with a team that really, like, everything was starting to click. And I can use this analogy because I watched a lot of the Lions. That Lions team and me as a Titans fan reminded me so much of the 2019 Titans team, because you had Arthur Smith there and you had Mike Vrabel. And what happened when Arthur Smith left? Mike Vrabel promoted his friends from within the organization. Todd Downing was the offensive coordinator, and the Titans haven't scored 30 points in a football game in 2 years. And not only that, but the pieces were similar. You had a statue quarterback in Ryan Tannehill who thrived off play action. You had one major weapon in A.J. Brown. You had competent tight end play with Jonnu Smith and Corey Davis on the other side. And you had a good offensive line. Like, it was the same blueprint. Can Jared Goff go out there and win you a game? Can Ryan Tannehill go out there and win you a game? Both had phenomenal seasons. I think I'm not calling either one a system quarterback, but I think they both had really nice systems put in place with really nice talent and a really nice offensive line. So obviously Jared Goff had a great season. I'm not saying that, but I think the similarities were different. And that was the prime example of a similar offensive structure and an offensive coordinator leaving, and the ramifications of that kind of trickling down for years, especially when a head coach is too stubborn to outsource for talent. And you know that damn well, Dan, because you're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, and they never do anything. But you must have been partying from your rooftop when they let go of Matt Canada midseason. And I know Arthur Smith probably isn't like the headline coaching change here, but since I kind of made that analogy, what are your thoughts about Arthur Smith? Obviously, he failed miserably as a head coach with Atlanta. Completely different role, though. So, yeah, I don't know. What are your expectations here?
Well, I mean, I wasn't thrilled with it, obviously, mainly because just his reputation this year. But I think it's fine. I think he doesn't – where he struggled was with being the whole leader of men aspect and the terms of, like, being the voice of the team, and that's something that Mike Tomlin does well and is very successful with. If he's just going to be X's and O's, right, and drawing things up and scheming things, I think that's probably fine, and it's a good fit. It feels like a little bit of a safe play by the organization because they know they have a good offensive line and they have a couple talented running backs, and they're trying to build through that. As a Steeler fan, it would have been nice to make a little bit of a bigger splash. I don't know if what else they could have done, but I mean, they're basically building with what they have. Obviously, that, like, there's still huge questions at quarterback that are going to hold them back in terms of how just getting over that hump of being, mediocre or slightly better than average, which is what they've been for, gosh, the last 5, even 10 years. You know, that's the knock on Tomlin. The reason I'm a little bit anti-Tomlin is that, you know, he's got this organization to be good but not great. And hasn't really won in the playoffs in, I think, 7 or 8 years now. So it's, again, feels safe. Maybe it's the first nail in Tomlin's coffin in terms of, like, if they end up being bad for a couple of years. I think people are waiting for them to – I know the whole Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season thing is like, a thing. But, like, how is it good being 9-8? Like, is it useful being that? Because you end up being – you don't get a good draft slot. Right. And then you don't get a chance to really rebuild, and you're kind of stuck in this purgatory, which is, I know, as a Titans fan, you could probably relate to, because the Titans have been somewhat in that same slog, right? Of, like, better than the worst teams and like competitive, which is a credit to their coach. I love Vrabel. But at the same time, you're not doing yourself any favors in terms of sort of accumulating draft picks and making sure you have some stock in the draft.
For sure. You know, if I had a dollar for every time that Will Priester said some guys are just better coordinators than coaches, maybe Arthur Smith is that guy. And yeah, maybe he bit off a lot more than he could chew. First time head coaching gig, chief, pressure from Arthur Blank, who maybe has irrational expectations and a quarterback who, quite frankly, isn't very good. So maybe there just wasn't a fair shake there. I mean, if you have any Arthur Smith thoughts, I mean, there are a ton of coaching moves around the league, you know, we could talk about. Is there any one of them that surprised you, Chief, the most?
I think I text you this, Luch, as a matter of fact, when we started seeing kind of the mass hiring. And I think I texted you after Raheem Morris went to Atlanta. And it's about Arthur Smith and everyone all combined, so I'm getting there. But I said, looks like the league is, as a whole, in terms of the owners, the management teams of the league, looks like there's a shifting of the guard here. Because when I text you, Luch, what I said was a lot of the old guys got no hires. They want new, fresh blood. I think that's what I texted you, or something to that effect. And my point behind all of this is, I'm actually pretty shocked at most of the hires, because most of the old guys, like, I think we thought for sure Bill Belichick would have a job. He has no job in terms of a head coaching opportunity. A lot of these coaches are young, like, or younger, let me say. You know, Jim Harbaugh gets the nod. Gerard Mayo gets the nod. Obviously, they had a plan, a succession plan that we didn't know about, obviously. But it was in his contract. Interesting, right? Gerard Mayo gets the nod. Titans, Brian Callahan gets the nod. Antonio Pierce. I will say, I think the Raiders giving Antonio Pierce a shot for a full season, I think that was the right move. I think we saw a significant shift in the culture of that team with Pierce at the helm. I was actually very, very thrilled that he got a shot to continue to impact the coach. I mean, you can even see it with Devontae Adams. He didn't get the ball 20 times every game, but he still looked bought into what they were doing to me. I thought that was a big deal let's call it Dan Campbell-esque, right? Like he had the troops ready to go. I thought that was a good hire. You know, the Panthers got Canales from Tampa Bay. Raheem Morris, you know, goes to Atlanta. Seattle gets Mike McDonald's, kind of staying around a defensive-minded head coach. We'll see how that works out. And then the Commanders hired Dan Quinn. And Luch texted me about this one, I think, yesterday. Luch, and you were like, interesting. Dan Quinn, I don't think that's who they actually wanted. But they end up with Dan Quinn. I think Dan Quinn might be getting the worst end of all these hires because Washington, that organization, is just in turmoil in terms of player personnel. And he's got to come in there and kind of try to rebuild something almost similar to the Steelers, but not so much. I want to revisit something that Dan talked about with Arthur Smith coming over. I think Arthur Smith hire is actually probably a little bit better than we think because they've got running backs that he can get that running game going. At quarterback, what are they going to do? Sounds like they may even have Mason Rudolph competing to start, which I get it. But I'm with you, Dan. I like Mike Tomlin as a coach. But, like, they just haven't had enough losses to go and get the big guns. Like, George Pickens is fine. Deontay Johnson is fine. You know, Freiermuth is fine. But, like, when are we going to get – I mean, obviously, Watt is there. You know,
when are we going to get Malik Nabers, right? When are we going to –
it's like –
You know, what have one bad season and say, okay, we got our Marvin Harrison. Like, we'll be fine next year.
So I think for a lot of these coaching hires, I actually like them. I think player personnel is going to be the key to a lot of these hires, though. Like, and that's the key anyway. But when you look at some of the top tier teams like San Francisco, what have they done? They've impacted player personnel significantly. I don't think we can overlook the job that John Lynch has done with player personnel. And he's not afraid to go swing for the fences in the season. Like, yeah, their defense wasn't great. And I still don't think their defense is elite. Don't get me wrong. But he wasn't afraid to say, you know what? Chase Young, we may not keep his contract, but let's go get him because we need him right now. Like, we need him today, right? And so player personnel, I think, is going to impact a lot of these things, and so we'll see how it shakes out. But I definitely was most impressed with the Raiders for keeping Antonio Pierce. I mean, like I said, I was very impressed with what I felt like was an immediate culture shift from the day he started coaching, was the interim head coach of the team. You could just see the moxie, and it's going to take more than that. Don't get me wrong, but I think it also impacted winning, and maybe they go out and get a quarterback of some sort, you know. Last thing I'll ask you, this one is for Dan.
Sure.
Because I do think there's something circling or swirling around this, Dan. I do think there's some validity to it because I'm starting to hear some rumblings, just backdoor talk. Do you think the Steelers swing for the fences and go get Justin Fields? And I'm not saying, man, Justin Fields is the answer. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is, do they think Justin Fields is better enough than what they have to try? Because at this point, I think Fields is leaving the Bears. I think there's some trade that's going to happen. How do you feel about that? Because it is starting to pick up some steam, like in just low-level media. Like it's getting a little smoke. Like, so I'm just wondering, like, what are your thoughts there? Do you think he's a better option? And if he is, I hope it's not Desmond Ridder 2.0. Clearly, he's better than Desmond Ridder. But I'm saying I feel like he'll try to use him in the run game, which actually might help. But just wanted to get your perspective as a fan.
Listen, I would support that 1,000%. I think the idea of swinging for the fences here makes sense. We saw enough of Cody Pickett to know he's not the guy. Mason Rudolph had a nice little run down the stretch, but is not the guy, right? We have a big enough sample on him. He's fine as a backup. I think that makes a 100. Listen, if you swing for the fences and miss, right, and then you're bad, just be bad for a couple years and rebuild. But this idea that they're just going to be good enough to beat bad teams but never beat good teams, be 9-8, 8-9, whatever, like that mediocrity thing is drives me nuts. I think Justin Fields, and I'm not like a huge Justin Fields truther, is clearly better than the options that they have. And if used in the right system, if Arthur Smith wants to get him some design runs, we saw him run the ball incredibly effectively on design runs last year. I mean, obviously we see like a dual threat quarterback is like what you want in the league right now. I mean, there's a few pocket passers out there who are elite at what they do, but dual threat quarterbacks, or at least guys who are mobile, who can run around and make plays like Mahomes, are what you want. And I think it would instantly make this team compelling, right? Because you could potentially elevate some of these receivers and playmakers with a mobile quarterback, with a competent quarterback. I don't even know how expensive he would be. I've heard rumors about what it would take to get him in terms of draft picks and you know, actual players. And, you know, I'd be curious to see what it actually costs to get him. But go for it. Why not? I mean, I think the last thing everybody wants is to see another season with a mediocre quarterback and just running the football and trying to win 13-10. And it's not fun. It's not that exciting. It's not an exciting brand of football to watch. I know there's this whole Pittsburgh mentality of like toughness and defense and whatever, but that's not what the NFL is anymore. It's not, right? It's an offensive league, right? It's a league.
That's all the rule changes. That's why they want you smacking guys and taking out the quarterbacks and, crushing them down. They want fun, high flying, reasonably scored games. Because it's more attractive. I'm with you.
And look at that division. Like, obviously, Deshaun Watson's healthy next year. You got him, Joe Burrow, and Lamar Jackson in your division. Like, you can't expect to compete with those teams with average or below average quarterback play. So either that, if you swing for the fences and miss, and he's not the guy, then you're bad, and then you go draft a young kid in a couple years and rebuild. I don't see any reason why they wouldn't do that, personally.
Yeah, I don't think there's too much risk with it because I don't think they have to extend him the first year. So I don't think they have to extend him at least. I'll go back and verify that just for my own personal thing. And by the way, Dan, my dad's a Steelers fan, so that's why I wanted to get your take. My dad would be elated for Justin Fields to come. It would just – honestly, it would just reinvigorate some excitement if nothing else. It's like, oh, man, like this could actually be fun. We could actually have a fun product on the field, and actually something you mentioned, and then Luch, I'm going to shut up and let you push this thing along because I don't want to get too far down a rabbit hole. Something you mentioned, I think, is like super underrated here. Joe Burrow wasn't healthy last season. If Joe Burrow's healthy 100% all the way through, they probably get out of that division and into the playoffs, and the Steelers are probably sitting at home. Like that's the reality. So I think they better make some type of move because Joe Burrow coming back, and we're going to see if he can stay healthy because, remember, availability is important, and his availability has been shaky here recently. You know, he's had some weird injuries that have cost him some time. Let's see if he can finish another season. But I definitely think getting a guy like Fields would be interesting for them. I think there's some truth to this. Steelers may try to put something together to get him. I also think there's something interesting with the Falcons that they may try. He is from Georgia, by the way. I think they may try to put something together. And I feel like those are the top two teams, in my opinion. Let me ask, last question, Luch, and then I'm done. Dan, how would you feel? And I think it's probably the right thing to do, unless they're going to get somebody that's really going to impact the organization. How do you feel about them just giving up their first rounder to go get him? And the Bears saying, hey, we'll take it. Like, and they say, hey, straight up, we'll give you our first rounder. Give us Fields. Now the Bears get, I think, three first round picks. I think, if I'm right, I think now they've got three. Do you think that's worth it enough to go get someone to quarterback this offense?
I do. Honestly, I do because, you know, we've seen teams give up that much or more for quarterbacks or to move up in the draft to draft the quarterback that they want. If it works out and he ends up being good and you're competitive and you extend him, it's probably cheap. That's actually cheap, right? For what? Right. And if it doesn't work out, hey, it's 1 year without a first round pick. I think they have enough organizational depth to recover from that. And if not, guess what? Again, people have to deal with the fact that sometimes you're going to have to be bad. And no one wants to be bad and watch a 3-13 season or whatever it might be. But, you know, most of the time you got to tear it down before you build it back up. So if you're already here and you want to get to here and quarterback play is the answer, there's no reason that you don't be aggressive and go after Fields. I would love to see it. I think it's brilliant. And to your point about Atlanta, he'd be fun down there too. If he didn't go to Pittsburgh, Atlanta would be a really fun spot to see what he could do there. But Pittsburgh clearly overachieved this year. They won some games they shouldn't have. They had a soft schedule. They got Cincinnati without Burrow. All the things broke well for them. They got to play the Ravens last week without Lamar. I mean, anyone that can't see that isn't really paying attention. That Pittsburgh really wasn't a 10-win team. They're maybe a 7-8 win team at best without things really breaking their way.
So no one ever really talks about this anymore, but just kind of piggybacking off of Lamar and Josh Allen, no excuses. I mean, they keep losing to Patrick Mahomes, who could arguably be the greatest quarterback of all time in 10 years from now. I'm not ready to say that yet. But how about, speaking of trading up, you know, giving mortgaging the farm, for lack of a better term, was when the Chiefs traded up to number 10 overall in 2017 for Mahomes, they gave up their first round pick, which was number 27. They gave up a 2018 first round pick, which was the next year, and a 2017 third round pick. So they gave up two firsts and a third. And I was really wrong, because I mean, I like Mahomes as a prospect, but when they traded up, I'm like, Alex Smith's pretty good. They got a pretty good team around him. They've gotten pretty far. Sometimes bold moves pay off. And, but how full circle is it that the trade that the Chiefs made was with Buffalo, and now Buffalo cannot beat them to get over them?
And guess what? Is anyone saying, God, those guys were idiots for trading both of their first and a third?
It's Buffalo now. Man, we were so stupid for giving them Mahomes. They gave him their guy. It's just ridiculous. But just circling back to some of the coaching stuff is, when you're playing NBA DFS, good times usually. When you're playing NBA DFS and you have this master plan to late swap, and then the injury news doesn't break your way, so you have nobody to late swap to. That's what happened when the Commanders hired Dan Quinn. They had no one left to late swap to. Ben Johnson went back to Detroit, offensive mind. Bobby Slowick, I guess maybe he wasn't ready or didn't interview well, went back to Houston. And I think the biggest story is, Bill Belichick and Mike Vrabel don't have jobs. And that goes partially hand in hand, I think, with what Chief said about the league, kind of turning a stone here and going with the new generation and offensive mind. And let me tell you, Mike Vrabel's not an offensive coach. Much like Dan Campbell, he will get players to run through a wall for you. But also, he's much better than Dan Campbell as an in-game decision. That's his strength. But and kind of tying this all together is, for some reason, more oftentimes than not, the past year, I don't know why, but when there's been smoke, there has been fire lately. And, I was told Mike Vrabel would land a job the next day, and that the Titans were the poverty organization for letting him go. And, he has his busting with the boys, friends Taylor Lewan and Will Compton, saying it was the dumbest move on the earth. Then you hear some inklings from some Titans players who I was surprised left or got cut, saying you had Wesley Woodyard went on a Nashville radio station and just said some stuff about Vrabel and how the locker room was actually really divided. Because he was so much in the mindset that coaches win games, not the players, that the ego thing was actually true. And word travels within this league very fast from organization to organization. And listen, I still like Mike Vrabel a lot. I love supporting him, but looking everything in hindsight now, he never outsourced for talent. We wasted 3 years of Derrick Henry with Todd Downing. Shane Bowen's an okay defensive coordinator, but he was so stubborn that he could coach his own guys up. He was the guy. He can get him to that level. This is my speculative opinion here. That eventually he kind of just got sick of it. And the Titans shipped out guys like Josh Reynolds, who had a miserable championship game, but was awesome for the Lions the whole year. They randomly shipped out guys like Tahir Tart, up and coming defensive lineman. There have been guys that for no reason have just kind of been cast offs. And I'm kind of wondering if, some of this smoke with the Mike Vrabel rumors at the local level has some validity to it, because I thought a perfect fit for him would have been a team like the Chargers, where, they're in cap hell right now, but they really needed someone to come in and get the most out of the talented roster on paper that they have. And if there's a guy that can flip a culture, is Mike Vrabel. And much like Dan Campbell did with Detroit, Vrabel kind of did that with Tennessee. But his stubborn loyalty over the past couple of seasons has actually set them back. And I'm getting this Mike Vrabel moment in because I had no other time to talk about it. But, you know, now people are really backpedaling on Mike Vrabel and he doesn't have a job. And maybe Andy Reid retires and maybe Bill or Mike get the job. But Kansas City is also not an organization who is going to give all the front office power to either one of those guys with the legacy that they've built. There's no way that that's going to be a fit with Belichick or Vrabel, who clearly, you know, want control of things. But so it's just a little coincidental that Tennessee has their press conference when they hire Brian Callahan and GM Rand Carthon, who was John Lynch's right-hand man from San Francisco. I have so much confidence in this guy. Said that a really good quote. He said that hunting at the same time isn't the same thing as hunting together, which I think was a really big shot at Vrabel, because I know there is a big difference of opinions. And for those of you that, you know, don't follow the Titans too closely, this is a completely new GM than John Robinson, who botched the A.J. Brown situation.
Big time.
Rand Carthon got Will Levis in the second round, who's shown some flashes that he's going to be a guy. He went out and got Tajay Spear in his one ACL, and people doubted that decision-making. Now Tajay Spears is like the hot commodity in the fantasy dynasty world right now. And he went out and got Peter Skoronski in the first round. So, like, I just think it's a combination of a lot of things. We talked about the NFL going to the youth movement, the offense, you know, with the turnover and OCs, you really need a guy who at least has his principles installed in a team for you know, 5 years to a decade to have a little bit of consistency there. And I don't know. I mean, maybe Vrabel and Belichick are out of jobs. I mean, if Andy Reid does end up retiring, which is possible, and maybe that's a segue to our Super Bowl talk here, I'm sure those guys would want to kick the door down to get an interview with Patrick Mahomes and company. But it just seems like a weird fit, an organization who has had so much pedigree, who has made the right decisions, you know, the past 5 to 10 years in Kansas City. I just can't see them, you know, like conceding to I don't want to say a power hungry head coach, but maybe that's what it is. So I guess looking back, the Bill Callahan hire, I'm pretty excited. He took his dad from Cleveland to coach the O-line. That's fun. They poached Denard Wilson from Baltimore as a secondary right after they lost, which was fun. So I don't know. Tennessee kind of – everybody thought they took a step back with Vrabel, but this might be the best staff I've ever seen on a Titans sideline since I could remember. So we'll see. And maybe that kind of goes into our Super Bowl talk here for the next, I don't know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes or so before we get out of here, if that's okay with you guys. But the fun stuff is what happens if the Chiefs win, you know. Does Andy Reid retire? Does, you know, Travis propose to Taylor? I'm just kidding, but there are some offshore odds with that. But the things that matter to us right now are, you know, that line flipped. I mean, money started coming in on Kansas City, and here we are. And actually, what is the line right now? Let me pull up scores and odds real quick.
I thought it was plus or Kansas City plus two this morning.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe that is what it was. So the line didn't flip.
It did for like a minute, and then it flipped back, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
Plus maybe that's two for sure. Plus two for sure.
Okay. So here we are.
Plus 100 on the money line for KC. Sign me up.
Yeah. So you're with the Chiefs for this one.
I've been rolling with them the whole playoffs, man. I just think they have looked better, and I think the Niners have been playing with fire, going down both of these games and being lucky to come back. They don't play well from behind. And if they're playing from behind against this KC defense, they're going to be a little bit in trouble. And I just like Mahomes. I like Andy Reid. I think all the experience means something, Kelsey, all of it. But just from a macro view, I think it's silly to count the Chiefs out in any scenario.
Yeah, and Chief, I'll throw it over to you. I've been like a little less impressed with the Niners defense, and there was a couple of weeks in the middle of the season where they were a little bit leaky, right? A couple of anomaly games where they gave up, you know, 25, 28 points. And of course, we've all seen it on Twitter now, but Chase Young just giving zero effort in a championship game last week. I mean, just walking around on plays that he could have made a tackle on and weird stuff. Now there's some smoke where they're considering benching him and some things like that. Just bizarre stuff, but I'm with you. Like, just even just from the eye test, and I don't think I would have said this 6 weeks ago, but the Chiefs are playing much better football collectively right now than San Francisco is, for sure. Chief, what are your thoughts on this game? Just from like a, I don't know, momentum standpoint, or just from the eye test here, how do you gauge these two teams right now?
Look, man, I didn't think I would end up here at this point in the season, but I think there's something to be said, because coaching competency in the NFL is a commodity. And so when I look at the Chiefs, and I look at Andy Reid, and I look at Patrick Mahomes, and this is something I tell my son all the time, like, son, don't always go for the shiny new toy. Experience in any sport, baseball, football, basketball, it matters. And as teams go through the ranks and they go through the trenches, like, they learn how to win. And that's something I've told my son, you guys have to learn how to win, right? And learning how to win is a compilation of everything. It's clock management. It's understanding the situation. It's knowing when to take the risk, when not to take the risk. And he plays basketball. But, you know, when do we take this deep three-pointer? When do we not take that? Like, some of it's feel, but it's understanding the game, right? And understanding, hey, we're down three with a minute and 30 left. I don't need to take a bad three-pointer for a long rebound, hand them another possession, and then they run and get – like, you just have to know that, right? And I'm saying that to say Andy Reid has proven if you hand him a chance to win the football game, he's going to win the football game. As brilliant as Shanahan has been as an offensive play designer
– yes.
How many times have we watched him almost botch a game at the end? Like, how many this season? I'm not even talking about the Falcons Super Bowl. Like, that's something totally different. I'm talking about this season, Dan and Luch. We saw him just botch play calling and game management at the end of a football game in a Super Bowl, where this is probably going to be the best defense he's seen for the whole playoffs, right? And a team where the Chiefs aren't going to most likely beat themselves. Like, they beat themselves earlier during the year with, you know, guys not lined up in the right position and guys dropping passes. But I think Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, if they get in any type of control of this game, I don't think they're going to relinquish it. And that's where I think the difference will be. I'm going to roll with the Chiefs because I think quarterback and coach are better just in general. And that's not a knock on Brock Purdy. That's not a knock on Shanahan. I just think Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, with the addition of Steve Spagnuolo, I think it may be too much for the 49ers for four quarters. I don't think it's a blowout. I think it could very well be a three-point game, three to four-point game. Like, I don't see blowout here. But I do think, you know, the Chiefs get there, even if they're down. Like, I think San Francisco could just give them the ball too early late. Like, that could be a bad, you know what I'm saying? Like, just a bad mismanagement. Patrick Mahomes gets it down 1 point with, you know, a minute 40 left rather than, you know, 30 seconds. That could be the difference in them winning the Super Bowl and him driving down the field and getting the field. So that's really how I view this game. I just think Andy Reid's a better coach overall. Nothing against Shanahan and Purdy.
I mean, I'll just jump right on top of that and kind of add a few things. What I think people don't realize about this Chiefs team this year is that they have a really different identity. They're not the Chiefs team from 3-4 years ago that was putting up 40 some points a game and had a bad defense and would win with offense. Like, the identity of this football team is like running the football with Pacheco, right? They have a really good run game. Their offensive line is pretty good. Their defense obviously is very good. And then it's timely playmaking by Mahomes, you know, finding Kelce on third down. Obviously Rashee Rice has come on really big and been a nice, you know, find for them because their other receivers are pretty lacking. And this is just a different football team. Like, they won that game 17-10 against the Ravens. They won a tough – like, that's not a game that they would win years ago in terms of winning tough, hard-fought football games. I listen to Travis Kelce's podcast every week, probably do like a lot of other people. And he talks every week about just how these guys are bought in. They play for each other. They play for Andy. They love Andy. They love like they're. And I'm not saying San Francisco has a bad culture or anything. San Francisco's clearly more talented on paper. Probably has better athletes and more positions. But I think Kansas City is just a kind of a team of destiny here. Like they're, it feels like when you're playing the Patriots back when they had the dynasty, they didn't have the best talent, but they you knew that like in the clutch, Tom Brady was going to make a play, the defense was going to come up big. It feels like they're in the middle of that ascension to like that type of dynasty.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how San Fran approaches this game because unlike Baltimore, this ain't Todd Monken's show and. You know, Spags can blitz. And the thing about Kansas City is they play the most two high coverage in football. And they play, I think, the sixth most man. So, you know, they're not going to completely change their identity. Of course, they have 2 weeks to prep. And this is, you know, a highly decorated staff. Like they're going to throw some wrenches in there for sure, especially against Brock Purdy, who hasn't been great lately. You know, some of the decision, some of the throws just hasn't been bad. But I kind of feel bad because, like, the media and just social media just crapping on him. But this guy tore his UCL last year, right? He had elbow surgery and it's still a cool story, whether or not he deserves the MVP or not. Like he still had like an incredible season. And maybe it's like a souped up version of Jared Goff in this offense right now. I mean, you know, is Jared Goff a good quarterback? Yes. Is he better because of the talent and the system he plays in and the offensive coordinator? Also, yes. Like both things can be true. And I know Chief has mentioned, you know, if you put Brock Purdy in a Broncos uniform in that system, like, what would he be playing? Like, I get it. But I think he's done more than enough to, like, warrant that he deserves to be that guy, and at least for another year here. But there's going to be so many cliffhangers and so much drama in the media. Whoever loses this game, it's going to be, well, you know, what's up with Travis Kelce? Even though he went off, even though he's going off at a historical like pace in the postseason, it's still going to be flipped on Travis Kelce. Like it's still going to be the whole offseason, the Travis Kelce show. And if San Fran loses, it's going to be, is Brock Purdy the guy? Like, is he the guy? And like, they would just be idiotic to not, you know, another year in the system. Like he's going to be the guy again next year. Like it's just,
can I make one addition to that outside of the Super Bowl?
Yeah, you should.
And Dan, I know you got to go, man. We're going to do our podcast. Is just, we love it. We talk about all kinds of stuff.
All good, man. You guys talk as much as you want. I'm good.
Fantastic. Another 30 minutes. I'm just kidding. Here's what I will say. And Luke, we've talked about this before. I think when you're an elder statesman in the league at quarterback, system matters way less. You've got enough experience. You've seen enough coverage. You've seen enough. You've been in tight moments. You've been in the 2-minute drill. You've been down 20. You've been up 20. Like you've just seen enough and have taken in enough information to probably be able to go anywhere. That's why, like, and I keep using Andy Dalton because I do think Andy Dalton's probably like one of the best backups in the league. In a sense, like he can probably go to any team and be just fine as a backup.
Like a Joe Flacco. How about Joe Flacco in Cleveland?
Right. See, that's perfect example. Yeah. Joe Flacco goes, he doesn't get out of this Houston series, but in general, like, he was fine. Nothing's going to rattle him like that, right?
Right.
When you're a young quarterback like C.J. Stroud, like Brock Purdy, like Patrick Mahomes, I do think system and situation matters early. And then as they get more experienced, then it matters less. And I think what we're seeing, and I'm saying that to support what we're talking about, in general, how we were kind of talking about Patrick Mahomes and Brock Purdy, because they're at two different stages of their career, right? Like Patrick Mahomes is kind of past that early stage. So now some of the mistakes we saw last year and the year before that, where he was just throwing footballs in the coverage, like, Pat, what are you doing? Why'd you throw that football? We're not seeing that this season, right? Because he's got enough experience under his belt to understand, I can't make that throw right now. It's going to cost us too much if it goes the other way, right? Where Brock Purdy, even in season two, in a good system, in the Super Bowl, I think we might see him press if this goes the wrong way, Dan. You get what I'm saying? And he might try to anticipate that path in two coverage that he shouldn't. And that's the difference between experience and the younger guy. So while C.J. Stroud looks like the next coming of a Patrick Mahomes type, and he very well may be, the system he's in and the trust they gave him mattered early, right? Versus you look at my guy Bryce Young, who had a terrible season. I'm going to say this, and then I'm going to close it. I don't know what Baker Mayfield did, but he had to do something good to someone. Man, God smiling on him. He's gotten so many chances, but what have you seen from Baker Mayfield? And I want to give him his props, because while Baker Mayfield may not be elite, all those coordinators and all those experiences have helped him to get a job. And we saw a really good Baker Mayfield this season. Why? Well, if he was a rookie, he wouldn't have played as well. He's had McVay and God, he had 4 or 5 different coordinators in Cleveland, yeah. Had one in Carolina. Like, he's just seen so much to now that he had a chance to get some stability. Look at what happened. Not that he lit the world on fire, but he showed I'm a good quarterback. And
now he's going to make some money.
He's in Carolina. Look,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so I'm saying that now to bring it back to the Super Bowl. This is what I see for Brock Purdy. I'm not calling him Baker Mayfield. That's not what this is about. This is about saying if he can take these lumps early, and he kind of has, whether they win this Super Bowl or not, he gets into this system and stays there. Even if he doesn't finish his career with San Francisco, Brock Purdy's going to have a good – because he's going to be past that area of needing a system to help him along the way. The more experience he gets, the better he's going to get over time. And so I'm going to back this up. I do think the Chiefs win this year. But I think, you know, I think San Francisco has a much smaller window than the Chiefs, for what it's worth. Like, this is another part of their window. If they don't win this year, I view them in the same camp as Baltimore. It's going to get ugly because they're going to have to start paying a lot of people, Brock Purdy being one of them.
I'm also taking Kansas City.
San Francisco's going to win because, you know, okay, we're all we I'm just kidding.
You know how that works.
Don't do right. that.
RIP to my Bills 35-1 ticket. But before that divisional round game, I did hedge bet the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl 8-1. So at least I have a little something to root for. Any props or early lines or anything catch your eye, Dan? A chalky play early in the 2 week window here seems to be McCaffrey rushing yards. Seems to be a popular look. And like, I understand it because they've really been leaning on him. And although Todd Monken didn't seem to watch the James Cook game, everybody else did and saw what they did to Kansas City up front. So what are your thoughts on McCaffrey in this matchup? Is he going to have any other props? But do you think McCaffrey kind of gets the monster volume everyone expects him to see?
I mean, it's tough because you can't predict the game script in terms of – I mean, Sanchez is going to run the ball no matter what. I get it, even down. But if the game script flips a little bit, I would get nervous about if they're playing from behind as they were with Detroit. Him, because the number's up there, right? It's up around 90 or something, or 88.
Yeah, 89. See 90 on Prize Picks. Yeah,
if I'm going after a big number, I think and it's all juiced up everywhere. But the safest thing is the Kelce catches and Kelce yards. Like, we saw what Laporta did against the Niners. Like, you know, their linebackers are great, but they're not great in coverage. And where can you attack them? Over the middle of the field in the flats. So I think, you know, Kelce's probably set for another 8, 9, 10 catches. 80, 90, 100 yards like he did last time. I think that's probably one of the safer bets. And then you can get into, like, you know, anytime touchdowns, like Kelce probably be my guy for KC, Kelce or Pacheco. And then I always like going with Debo for touchdown props where because they do like to give him the ball on some running plays down in the red zone. And of course he has that ability to make a play after the catch. So I rather than bet McCaffrey at -250 for a touchdown, why not go Debo +110, something like that, for the Niners?
Yeah. Looks like +175 in MGM. That's a pretty good call. I like that.
Well, that's real nice, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And he's had two weeks to get healthy. So, and he played 77% of the snaps. I mean,
yeah.
He'll be in decent shape, I think.
They always here's the thing with Debo. They always have a bunch of, like, predetermined, kind of scripted. First in the first couple drives, especially a couple running plays, screen plays, like things. They definitely design him the football, and they get him the ball in the red zone too. So I like that for like a DFS / betting thing. Debo is probably a guy I would focus on.
Yeah, and and I'll pass it over to you, Chief, and then we'll start closing out. But with how much man coverage, you know, compared to the league and too high stuff that Kansas City plays, like my best guess is we're going to see some bubble screens and things early. I mean, it just makes sense to if you're having one-on-one coverage on the outside. And, you know, I don't know if I have to make some decisions here, but Debo's receptions are at 3.5. And I get it. It's a spread around, low volume kind of pass attack. But I just think we're going to see a lot of short stuff, try to get these guys in space. You know, if you know, the slot receiver can make a block or two, you can get some explosive plays as we've seen time after time against this man coverage. You know, if Purdy can deliver the ball on time, like if Spags going to get the same, you know, come at San Fran with the same kind of pressure, it's going to be an interesting chess match to watch, you know, two brilliant minds and, you know, Shanahan up against, you know, Spags and seeing what kind of chess match we get on Sunday. Yeah. I mean, boys, you got anything else about the Super Bowl? Any Gatorade color predictions? Anything else we didn't touch on?
And just in terms of passing, I'm as of right now, I feel like I'm leaning under on both passing props, believe it or not. Like, I just think, I think the Kansas City defense is going to be able to limit Brock Purdy here, at least early enough in the first half to maybe hold him back a little bit. Like, I mean, on the books, he's at around 245 most places. I like the under there for a variety of reasons. And then with Patrick Mahomes, you can get him at 262.5 on FanDuel, which is, you know, 2 yards more than where most places are. And it's not about, do I think these quarterbacks are really good? I think they're both really good. Obviously, we consider Patrick Mahomes elite. I just think the game plan, and I think, Dan, you mentioned this, and I think it's incredible. Like, when's the last time we've seen a Kansas City running back get 18, 20 carries a game? Like, that's what we're seeing with Pacheco. And, I mean, they'll sprinkle in CEH for one or two. But, I mean, I think one of these games – did Pacheco have 24 carries? Like, I think he might have 24 carries in one of these games. Might have been the last one, but don't quote me on that. But either way, I think with the combination of the run game and you know, Mahomes kind of having two solid targets to throw to and Rice and Kelce, I like unders on both of these guys. Now, obviously, yeah, you know, the game gets out of hand. Purdy's got to throw late. Like, it could shift, but I think this defense is good enough to hold Purdy back. And I think if Kansas City's in control of this game, they play a little bit more clock management like we saw against Baltimore. And I don't think they completely take their foot off the gas like in Baltimore, but I think, you know, I think they try to control it with the big guys up front. And so I like the under for both these passing games.
Yeah, and I think that speaks overall to the overall under too, like 47.5. I'm okay with an under there because I can see this being a 24-20 or 21-17 type game with both teams really valuing every possession, trying not to make mistakes, throwing short passes, trying to run the football. Both teams playing two high safeties, taking away deep shots. We always want a lot of offense, but in reality, like, these coaches know, you know, they're in the big game. They're gonna try to take away that stuff. We never know with special teams touchdowns and defensive things. They're always fluky. But in general, I think I lean the under overall too.
And it's, I don't care who they are. I don't care if it's, you know, Mahomes or, you know, Peyton Manning, Joe Montana. Like, there's still some nerves for the first drive or so. Like, maybe, you know, all you need is, you know, one or two, you know, miscues or, you know, poorly executed plays, and that saves you from some kind of scoring potentially. So I kind of side with, you know, there's a line between analytics and, you know, real life stuff, but the human nature of it is, I mean, there's billions of eyeballs that are going to be on this game, and you got to feel it a little bit. So, so I guess for story time, let me ask you this. I mean, football season's wrapping up. I'll open it up to both of you. Kind of just came to my mind. For you, Dan, and you, Chief, you know, we're all in the content world here. And on top of that, what is life after football season? Like, what, you know, obviously some time opens up and we're all busy people and we have things to do. And I guess, you know, Dan, like, obviously you have a lot going on in your personal life too, but also, like, what, you know, in the sports space, like, how early do you start, you know, shifting your mental game to baseball and, you know, looking forward here, just like, you, what do you do with the gap in entertainment? Do you watch something else during the off season on TV? Any series you're into or anything like that?
Well, I know me and Chief are big basketball guys. We're going to keep following the NBA every day. I try to watch the Cleveland Cavs. They're my squad. Another win last night against Memphis. On NBA TV whenever I get a chance, or on League Pass. My wife and I just started from the beginning. We had never seen it. The show Modern Family. And I was like 10 or I don't know how I ever watched the show. It was like gone for 10 or 12 years or something. So we just started from the beginning and we're watching it with my just about 11-year-old. She's just turning 11. So that's interesting because there's like some little bit of risque stuff in there occasionally. So, but it's fun for her. It's like a thing we do after my little toddler goes to bed every night. But basketball for the next couple months. But baseball, I just tweeted out yesterday, it's 55 days till I get to bet Cole Reagans over strikeouts against the Twins. Oh. So
we have a Cole Reagan truther, yes.
Yeah, baby. Yes. I love strikeout props and baseball stuff. And obviously the Pirates, I was on a podcast with a friend of mine the other day doing Pirates preview, and there's not a lot to preview with the Pirates. But in general, I do look excited about baseball season. And, you know, I just love it. I love that the covering three sports keeps things fresh for me. And so – when football's over, I'm like, we're still doing NBA, and then basketball or baseball's coming up. And by the time midsummer, baseball gets to be a bit of a drag, right? In July and August, you're like, well, hey, training camps are starting for football, and it just never stops, man. So it keeps things moving, keeps things fresh, keeps things fun. I don't know how people cover one sport all year round. I don't think I could do it. I know some people can do it. I don't think I could do it. Will, what about you, bud?
Listen, you already know. Baseball, I started digging into baseball probably a month ago. And that's the lie. Because and it wasn't digging in terms of like standard. I just want to see, okay, who's been moving, right? Because you know, baseball sometimes these weird transactions happen, you don't know. And a player that may not be as important, but it's still important for us because of the DFS aspect and the fantasy aspect and the props and pick 'em aspect. So, you know, I started digging into that stuff and saw some interesting things. I'm sure you guys saw the news yesterday. Corbin Burns going to Baltimore right after they sold the team. Yeah. That is huge. That tells me Baltimore is in to try to win this thing. Right?
Yep.
I said, boy, this is getting interesting. While the Yankees got Juan Soto. Like, I think, and I know that was like kind of at the beginning of the big surge, but Baltimore sneakily making moves. And the thing about baseball that I think is different from basketball and football, to some degree, the best team doesn't always win. It's who's peaking at the right time. And I think Baltimore is trying to find a way to peak at the right time. You know, when I look at the Braves, can we just get some pitching? Like, that's my team. Obviously, I live in the southeastern part of the United States, and the Braves were the only professional baseball team in my area. So I've been a Braves fan since I've been, you know, knee high to a house cat. I think that's another old Southern phrase, but you know, who peaks at the right time? And a lot of these teams, I feel like, have made some moves. The Dodgers have essentially tried to buy a championship. We'll see how that works out for them. And there you have it. But baseball is fun. I love the strikeout props. And then, you know, now we've got DraftKings Pick 6 that's available to us, which is changing the game in terms of peer-to-peer contests, kind of like traditional DFS. They don't move the lines all day. And so I think that's going to challenge Prize Picks and Underdog and all these other pick'em sites to kind of think about what they're doing differently. And I actually think it's going to help for a better ecosystem for the pick'em space, especially since, you know, at one point, man, a lot of these companies, Prize Picks, Underdog, were taking a lot of heat from legislation, you know, with what I consider backdoor deals, people telling them, look into this. Is this really – you know, a game? And I think as the pick'em space evolves, I know it's the story time, and that's kind of what I'm talking about. As it evolves, I think peer-to-peer is the new way that people are going to play the props and pick'em game. And I think that's going to essentially save the DFS industry, because it's a beautiful industry to do.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So some national but local news is Punxsutawney Phil did not see his shadow today. So he said early spring, which means pitchers and catchers, baby, we're there. We're ready for some, 40-degree baseball weather. I'm looking forward to it. That's got to be a little bit closer to your way, right? The
up this way. Yeah, we're still in a couple hours away. But yeah, it's always a big deal in PA. what Punxsutawney does, Punxsutawney Phil does. Hey, speaking to your Orioles thing, I just looked. They're plus 600 to win the AL, third best odds now behind the Yankees and Astros. So maybe time to get a bet in, right? I love the young core they have in Baltimore. It's only about 75 miles down the highway here. It's actually closer to Baltimore for me than Pittsburgh or Philly to get it. So I'm going to try to get down to Camden Yards and see some games this year.
Great stadium, too. I haven't been in a couple of years, but I love how they let you bring in like outside food and stuff like that. Like real family atmosphere. But it's gonna be fun, man. And I'm excited. And we'll have you covered here. At some point, we'll be back in this podcast. I would love to do an NFL draft kind of edition. I think we did that last season off the run it up the chain and see if we can get the green light. But we can't thank all you listeners enough for our season finale here, and hope you enjoyed a little breakup from all the analytics and everything you follow around the sports betting and DFS industry, wherever it is. Hopefully this is a good little mental reset button, and thanks for letting us be in your earbuds, whether you're at the gym or cleaning the house or whatever it is that you do. We appreciate you. But before I let Chief close it out here, hey, Dan, where can the people find you on Twitter if they want to give you a follow?
Yeah, I'm at ThunderDanDFS. Check me out there. I post some stuff daily for NBA props and, have links to all of my different content at Rotoballer. So appreciate you guys having me on, man. It was a blast.
Absolutely. Chief, any closing thoughts before we ride off into the sunset here?
Well, as we always tell you every year, folks, this ain't your mama's podcast, and it never will be. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you around the way.
Awesome. Well, for Dan and Chief, I'm the Looch. We'll catch you in a couple months. Enjoy the Super Bowl.